On to the next panel, Deal Ethics. And I'll introduce the panel here. First panelist, Mr. David Albin. Dave is a partner with Finn, Dixon, and Herling, and he represents clients in the areas of mergers and acquisitions, private equity, and venture capital, securities law, and general representation. Our next panelist is Nathaniel Doliner. Nat practices law in areas of mergers and acquisitions, corporate law, corporate governance, and joint ventures. And our third panelist is Mr. Rob Kibbe. Rob leads the corporate securities group at Munch Hart Coffin Har. Has been practicing over 30 years, and I've had the privilege of closing a deal with, on the other side of Mr. Kibbe earlier this year, and I can tell you, tough but fair. So
ethical.
Well, that's as good as you're going to do. Thank you. So for the next hour, we're going to walk through a series of ethical issues that M&A attorneys might encounter during their representation of a client in connection with an acquisition. While we have a presentation prepared for you, we would love to answer any questions you have, so please feel free to submit them in whatever manner you're most comfortable with. M&A ethics, surprisingly, is not an oxymoron. We are going to be discussing how lawyers should respond to certain situations that they're often confronted with during their representation of clients in a transaction. We are mostly going to be relying on guidance provided by the ABA model rules and the commentary that is a part of it. Keep in mind that unless otherwise specified, we're referring to the model rules. Most states follow the format of the ABA model rules, but there are state-specific modifications to them. In handling a real-world situation that you come across, make sure you refer to the rules of the jurisdiction in which you practice, because the standards that might apply to you in a given situation could be different than those being discussed here today. So with that, let's get started with our presentation. Let's start with some issues that transactional lawyers face on a daily basis when we're negotiating the terms of an acquisition or disposition. The preamble to the model rules defines the roles of attorneys. As advocate, a lawyer zealously asserts the client's position under the rules of the adversary system. As negotiator, a lawyer seeks a result advantageous to the client, but consistent with requirements of honest dealings with others. The issue we all face, of course, is balancing this role as a client advocate against the other professional responsibilities required of us as lawyers under the rule. Nat, now let's assume you're representing the seller in a deal, and seller has requested assistance from your law firm to give buyer a little push toward a higher purchase price. Eager to help your client, you tell buyer's counsel that unless the buyer increases its offer by 5%, seller plans to sell itself to another potential acquirer that it's currently negotiating with. In fact, the seller hasn't received any other offers. Is this type of a bluff okay?
No, David. Model Rule 4.1 prohibits a lawyer from knowingly making a false statement of material fact or law to a third person. Stating that seller has an additional suitor would likely be a materially false statement. In addition, under Rule 8.4, it's professional misconduct for a lawyer to engage in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. Rule 8.4 has no materiality standard, so bluffing about the existence of a competing acquirer may involve all four of these impermissible categories of conduct.
Just as a note, we're going through the slides relatively quickly today. They are all in your materials, so feel free to have a copy and reference them. All right, so lawyers are not able to flat out lie during negotiations within the boundaries. Note, of course, that that prohibition is not limited to the context of negotiating a transaction.